Jocelyn, you are considered the lady of pulsars, the pulsars lady. Why you decided to study physics? And have you always dreamed to be a scientist?
From about age 13 or 14, I knew I wanted to be an astronomer. I wasn't quite sure what kind of astronomy, because I need my sleep. So optical astronomy did not seem a good idea. But then I discovered radio astronomy, and I decided I would be a radio astronomer. So my school studies and university studies were physics and mathematics, so that I could become a radio astronomer.
And at that time, were you supported by your family, or did they have other expectations for a girl or for the family?
My family were very supportive, but society at large, no. At that time where I was living, girls would become housewives, wives, mothers. They did not need much education. It was the boys that needed the education. So my school said girls learn cookery and needlework, and boys do science. And my parents had to fight the school. The school ended up with three girls and all the boys in the science class. This was at age 12.
So this was, in some way, the luck also of your career, having a very strong supporting. You started studying physics in 1961, so a long time ago, in a different society, as you told me. And you were in Glasgow. Do you have any good memories of that time?
In Glasgow, I did honours physics. I ended up the only female in the class, 49 men and me. So, of course, all the lecturers knew who I was and could see if I was doing well or not doing well. At that time in Glasgow, it was the tradition, and that's in inverted commas, the tradition that when a woman entered the lecture room, all the men whistled and catcalled and banged the desks and stamped the floor, made as much noise as they could. And normally the women would gather outside the lecture room and come in together. But as the only female, I had to face that alone. I discovered that you can control your blushing. Do you know that word?
Becoming red?
Yes. Yeah. You can control that. And I learnt how to control it, because it was important not to blush when I went in and faced all that catcalls and noise.
It was something like a weakness that you show the red on the face. Yeah, it was considered as a weakness.
It encouraged them to make more noise if you blushed.
And when in Cambridge, you studied and made research as a PhD student. And your activity was dedicated to the recording of signals from the universe. And what happened that day on November 1967 and with the little green man?
I was a radio astronomy worker, a PhD student. I had spent 2 years helping build a big radio telescope. And then for several months, I had been the only person using that telescope. In Cambridge, I was very scared. There were not many women. The men all seemed very, very clever and very confident. And I thought, they have made a mistake. I am not clever enough. They should not have given me a place. They will discover and they will throw me out. But until they throw me out, I will work my very hardest. I will do my best. And so I was being very thorough, looking at the data coming in from the radio telescope I was using. And I noticed about 5 millimeters of signal that did not make sense. I could not understand it.
We usually hear about great discoveries, but we don't see the long journey before them and behind of the work and the efforts. So what was your work like? So you spent time in the observatory, but also working on the field or going out with a bad weather? Or what was your work like in a daily routine?
For the first 2 years, I was helping build the radio telescope. So I was working out at the observatory site, putting plugs on cables, hammering posts into the ground. I could swing a big, what we call a sledgehammer, 12 pounds, 3 or 4 kilos of hammer. Became very strong and very cold and very wet.
A lot of exercise,
yes. No brain. But I also was responsible for all the cables. And in radio telescopes, there are kilometers of cables. So I spent 2 years helping build the radio telescope. And then when it was built, the other people, 5 or 6 people, moved to other projects. And I was left to run the radio telescope, to operate the telescope.
I know I read that soon after the discovery, you got married. And how this decision influenced your career?
Yes, I got married between submitting my thesis, handing in the thesis, and having the VIVA exam. So I had finished in Cambridge by the time I got married, but only just. I then began to realize how hard it was to get good jobs for two people in the same place. And I ended up moving jobs because my husband was getting promotion and I was looking for what astronomy I could do in that new part of the country. So I moved from radio astronomy to gamma ray astronomy, from gamma to X, from X to infrared and then millimeter. And then the marriage broke up. And I decided I would study compact stars at whatever wavelength was good for the science. So I stopped being a wavelength specialist.
So your career has in some way adapted to your private life.
Yeah, and a lot.
Do you have any regret?
I'm a bit annoyed that it is always the woman's job that gets compromised. The man has the normal career. Well, women's career gets compromised if they have children. That makes breaks as well. And the way scientific society works, it's the male model that is the norm.
In modern astronomy and astrophysics, which discovery you liked most?
I had particular fun when I was working in X-ray astronomy. This was the late 1970s. My job was to check the data coming in from the Ariel 5 satellite and plan the observing program. But because the data was coming across my desk for checking, I could see that as well as that cluster of galaxies, there was a transient source that we had observed. So I need to find a spare student to look at that data from the transient source. And then next week, something like that would happen again. We're observing a quasar. There's another transient source. So X-ray astronomy turned out to be much more exciting than I had expected, because of lots of things changing in intensity, transient, flaring and dying. And we were also finding periodicities in the data because there were neutron stars.
Yeah. It's becoming famous.
Yeah.
And which one you are expecting next? Which discovery you are expecting next in this field?
If you had asked me a few years ago, I would have said gravitational radiation, because I have believed in gravitational radiation ever since I was a student. I was lucky as a student in Glasgow in my last year to have as tutor Professor Ron Drever. He was no help as a tutor, but he talked about exciting science, and I thought, I will watch any field that Ron Drever works in. And he moved into gravitational radiation quite soon after that. So I've been watching the development of gravitational radiation. I knew there would be a detection. I was not sure I'd be here to see it. And it happened.
That's a beautiful moment to be and work as a scientist, I think, because for more than 100 years, they worked to detect gravitational waves.
Yes.
So,
and
we are so lucky to see what Einstein predicted. And so about discrimination, since the Nobel Prize that was not awarded to you and you were not mentioned in the celebration, and you were only asked about the human and artistic part of the discovery. You already told me about other discrimination that you had at that time, but have you experienced other discrimination during your career and in the following years?
It gets better all the time. I don't know enough about the role of women in this country, but in my country, following the Second World War, 1945 onwards, during the war, the women had worked because the men were away fighting. When the war ends, the men come back. You have to get the women into the home. Great emphasis on women as wives and mothers. In Britain, gradually women have one place in the working world. You're not seen only as a wife and mother. You're seen as a wife and mother as well as your job.
Yes.
But
so you received the famous Breakthrough Prize and you decided to make a special dedication of this prize to an issue that you feel very strongly. What was it and why?
I decided I had to get rid of that money very quickly. Otherwise, the telephone would never stop ringing. I recognized that an important part of my discovering pulsars was the fact I was a woman and in a minority and working hard to justify my place as a minority person. So I thought, if we can fund other minority research students, maybe they too will work very hard and discover things. So the money went to our Institute of Physics to pay for graduate students in physics who come from, well, who are not white men. People of color, women, people with disabilities, all the minorities in
yes.
British physics.
You represent a role model for the young generation and all the International Day of Women and Scientists cited you as a symbol of this fight against gender discrimination. Who was your model and who inspired you?
I don't think I had a role model. There was no such person. My father was very supportive, which was good. But I think a lot of the time I have had to make my own path, because there have been very, very few other women. So I make the path.
And last, what message would you like to leave and send to the students and the young scientists that are approaching this kind of jobs?
Doing science research is huge fun. It's a very exciting time now in astronomy and physics with a lot happening. So if you have the ability to do a degree and then a postgraduate degree in physics or astronomy, I would recommend it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.